Hello again. I'm Steve Murphy, a trusts and estates attorney with McGuire Woods LLP. And this is Legacy Planning Once Removed, my podcast on property, taxes, estate planning, legacy, family, and everything else on my mind. In an earlier episode, I talked through some strategies that spouses often consider of how to use their estate, gift, and GST tax exemptions while giving the right people access, control, and flexibility over the assets. These are in the episodes on the Spousal Lifetime Access Trust, or SLAT, and the Reciprocal Trust Doctrine. I've again gotten some great feedback from listeners on some of these techniques. So this episode is on a related concern called the Step Transaction Doctrine. So here on Legacy Planning Once Removed, I'm trying to make these episodes evergreen and not tied to a particular time. Of course, the problem is that the laws in this area tend to change. And here's one example. At the end of 2025, the estate, gift, and GST tax exemptions are scheduled to be cut in half. As of right now, March 2024, the exemptions are $10 million indexed for inflation. So it's $13.61 million per person and per spouse. But at the end of 2025, that exemption is scheduled to be cut in half to $5 million indexed for inflation. So, in part because of that, some clients are wondering, how can they use that exemption before the end of 2025? And in particular, how can they and their spouse use their exemptions before the end of next year? This can be a particular challenge if only one spouse has assets in his or her own name. And also keep in mind that under current law, if one spouse dies, the other spouse can make use of the deceased spouse's unused estate and gift tax exemption. This is through a process called portability. We've talked about that before, but portability in detail will have to be the subject of another episode. But suffice it to say right now that if one spouse dies without using his or her own gift and estate tax exemption, it's not necessarily wasted. But also keep in mind that for the exemption for generation skipping transfer tax, or GST tax, that exemption is not portable between spouses. So for clients who want to make sure GST tax exemption is used at the death of one spouse, they do need to plan accordingly. And last, remember that spouses can elect to split gifts. So one spouse can make the gift, then the other spouse can agree to treat the gift as made 50% by each spouse. So again, splitting gifts by spouses, that'll have to be another episode. So I've summarized these concepts here just to emphasize that there are many reasons why spouses don't need to put assets in the other's name. But for many reasons, spouses still would want to put assets in the other's name. And then the other spouse will have assets to make gifts or use GST tax exemption, or maybe even set up a trust for the donor. For that trust for the donor, again, see the episode on SLATs and the Reciprocal Trust Doctrine. But as clients start to think about moving assets back and forth, I want to remind them of another pitfall. It's called the Step Transaction Doctrine. So in these cases, spouses might need to reshuffle or retitle assets in order to implement the most efficient gifting plan. And this could include transferring assets, specific assets to one spouse, like interest in an LLC, or maybe retitling assets out of their joint names, or maybe even just simply transferring cash funds or investments between brokerage accounts. But clients and practitioners have to be careful in moving those assets, and in particular, the timing of any multi-step transaction to avoid this step transaction doctrine. This doctrine looks to the substance of a transaction rather than the form. So, in other words, if multiple steps in a transaction appear to be interrelated, the IRS and maybe others may view those steps as if they made up one single transaction instead of distinct and isolated parts. In those cases, the IRS will collapse those transactions. There isn't one clear test applied by the courts in determining whether the step transaction doctrine applies. Instead, the courts have utilized three different tests. It's the end result test, or the interdependence test, or the binding commitment test. Now, these are complicated tests, and each of them is based on slightly different factors or approaches. And some emphasize subjective intent, and some emphasize objective facts, but they all point in the same direction. If multiple transfers are part of one big transfer, the IRS might argue that they'll treat it as that one big transfer. And a recent tax court case illustrates this doctrine in a gift planning context and also highlights the unfortunate consequences when it applies. That's the case of Small Dino versus Commissioner, the recent case from the tax court. The full citation is in the show notes. So in that case, Louis Small Dino owned and operated certain rental properties in California. Louis apparently decided to get his estate planning in order. And as part of that estate plan, Louis wanted to make sure that his children from a prior marriage would benefit from the various rental properties. So he wanted to gift interests in an LLC holding those properties to dynasty trusts benefiting his children and grandchildren. But Louis had already used some of his estate in gift tax exemption. But his wife Augustina, on the other hand, had not. And that's an important fact. If Louis hadn't used any gift tax exemption, then Louis could have just made the gift, and then Augustina could elect to split the gift. That's permitted as long as certain tests are satisfied. And in this case, that probably would have worked just fine because Augustina was not a beneficiary of the dynasty trust. But here, because Louis had used some of his gift tax exemption, the goal was that Augustina would make those gifts, but she needed assets to make that gift. So what they did is they hired an appraiser to determine how much of the LLC Augustina could transfer without incurring her own gift tax liability. Then Louis transferred that amount of LLC units to Augustina. By the way, there are some interesting facts here about the timing. The assignment was noted as effective April 14th, but it didn't otherwise indicate the date it was actually signed. And the tax court suggested that maybe the assignment was only signed much later in the year when they had the appraisals in hand. But in any event, Augustina, once this first assignment had been signed, Augustina then executed her own assignment, transferring the LLC interest to the trustee of the dynasty trust established by Louis for his descendants. And then, another part, Louis executed another assignment to transfer additional units to the dynasty trust and use what was likely his remaining gift tax exemption. So there seem to be some other gaps here in the documentation. For example, while the LLC's operating agreement was updated to reflect the second transfer of units to the dynasty trust, the operating agreement was never amended to reflect the first transfer of units to Augustina. When the IRS audited the Smaldino's gift tax return, the IRS determined that Louis had actually made the gifts to the dynasty trust. And because he had already used up his gift tax exemption, they issued a notice of deficiency of $1.1 million in gift tax. Louis appealed. On appeal, the tax court sided with the IRS. And again, they pointed to a number of problematic facts in these various transactions. The court took issue with the dating of the various assignments. They took issue with the fact that the parties hadn't updated the operating agreement to reflect the intermittent transaction to Augustina. And the tax court also noted that Augustina had not actually officially become a member of the LLC. But one key bad fact seemed to be Augustina's statements about her view of the transfers. She admitted at trial that she made the transfer to the trust because, and I'm quoting from the court's opinion here, she had already made a commitment promise to her husband and family that she would transfer the LLC units to the trust. That kind of commitment suggests that the transaction will run afoul of the step transaction doctrine. It would be a better fact if these were to be separate transactions. But again, at trial, Augustina further testified that she did not feel that she could have changed her mind if she had wanted to, because she said she believed in fairness. So in this case, the tax court collapsed the two transfers and treated it as if Louis was the transferor all the way to the dynasty trust. And because he didn't have enough gift tax exemption remaining, that triggered gift tax. So as we can see, one concern about the stamp transaction doctrine is that it's very fact specific. And because each of these doctrine tests are so fact specific, if clients do intend to reorganize assets prior to making a taxable gift, advisors and clients should be careful to document these various transactions as distinct steps, again, to confirm that they're not the result of some pre-existing commitment to make the later transfer. So just as an example, we might ensure sufficient time has elapsed between the various transactions, and we might document each of those transactions on validly dated instruments and tax returns and the like. we might want to make sure that we're not coordinating these transactions as part of a contractual or some sort of written agreement. We want to make sure we're complying with any provisions in governing instrument for the transferred entities, like in this case, the LLC operating agreement. We want to maybe clarify that these decisions are the result of independent decision making. And we might even want to have the spouses represented by separate counsel. Now, another thing we might think about in the meantime is we might want to have the spouse actually act as the owner of these assets for this intermittent time. So maybe once the first transaction is made, the spouse could exercise some control over those assets. Maybe the spouse takes a distribution from that account or receives a distribution from the LLC. Maybe the spouse participates in a vote. Now, again, there's potential problems with moving these assets into the other spouse's name. What I'm emphasizing here is that we want to make sure the other spouse has the right and power to change his or her mind and not go through with that transfer. And you might worry, what if the spouse does change his or her mind? Or what if the spouse dies while holding those assets before making that second transfer? But I think, unfortunately, that's a risk we have to take in order to ensure that all the facts emphasize these are two separate transactions. And keep in mind also, there are benefits of moving these assets into the other spouse's name. For example, if the assets are moved to the other spouse, they should be beyond the reach of creditors or future creditors of the first spouse. And if the spouse dies during that time period, then the spouse can use his or her own GST tax exemption in the meantime. But again, think about the stakes here. If the step transaction applies, then we have to worry about gift tax issues, like the case of Smaldino. We also might be concerned about asset protection. Remember, one benefit of these types of transfers and slats and the like is that once transferred, the assets could be beyond the reach of the donor spouse's creditors. But if the step transaction doctrine is triggered, then maybe those creditors could argue that the donor is treated as the actual transferor, and if the donor is a beneficiary of the trust, they could come back and pursue those assets. So again, there might be some great opportunities here for married couples to move assets between themselves and make sure they're efficiently using their estate, gift, and GST tax exemption, and to make sure they're taking advantage of opportunities for asset protection, especially in light of upcoming changes in the law. But as we put these transactions together, we want to be very careful to avoid these pitfalls, including the step transaction doctrine, as the Smaldino case illustrates. I'm Steve Murphy, and this has been Legacy Planning Once Removed, my podcast on thoughtful estate planning. Thanks for listening.